You're listening to the On the NBA Beat podcast, a show packed with nuanced perspectives on the league's most important stories.
Portland has three timeouts left. The Lakers have two. Bryant to Shaq.
LeBron James with no regard for human life.
Jordan. Oh, a spectacular move by Michael Jordan.
And now, your hosts, Lauren Lee Chen, and the twins, Aaron and Joshua Fishman.
It's great to be back here on the NBA Beat. I'm your host, Aaron Fishman. On the heels of the Dallas Mavericks' 9-3 start, we've brought back Emmy Award-winning director Jason Gallagher, and you bet the head of production at The Old Man and the Three comes ready with analysis of the Mavericks' scalding start as 24-year-old MVP candidate Luka Doncic has led the way with 30-plus points per game, the second-most trays converted after Stephen Curry, and the lowest usage rate of his career, other than his rookie season. Jason touches upon a myriad of topics, including the improved fit between Doncic and Kyrie Irving, now that they've had adequate time to gel, teen center Derek Lively's instant success, Grant Williams and Derek Jones Jr. starring in their respective roles, Tim Hardaway Jr.'s six-man brilliance, and ultimate expectations for the Mavs season. Without further ado, here we go.
Hey, Jason. The Mavericks are playing well. It's as good a time as any to talk with you again. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going good. The basketball is fun. Not just in Mavericks world. The NBA is off to an amazing start, and it's awesome that Dallas is doing well.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the start to the season, except for those bright red courts. Those are a little jarring. I actually like those Charlotte, some of the courts for the in-season tournament. Mostly not, but yeah, those are really, really jarring.
I respect the attempt. Genuinely, I do. I understand the need to make a splash with this new thing, but some of them are misses, and I would say most of them, in my opinion, are misses. I don't like the dominant colors taking up the majority of the courts. The ones that I tend to gravitate towards are the ones that are a little bit more neutral with the colored stripe in the middle. I'm fine with those. I think Milwaukee has a pretty good one, which is basically the color of a basketball court with a green stripe in the middle, and I think all teams should adopt that.
I think I'm in complete agreement with you because I really liked the Lakers one. It was yellow, which is kind of close to a normal court. It seemed more subtle. But small talk aside, we have so much to discuss for the Mavericks, so let's just get into it.
Yeah.
So ESPN power rankings that they do every week with a panel of seven of their writers came out yesterday on Wednesday, putting the Mavericks fourth in the league. They've started 9-3. They have an elite offense. Their offensive rating is second only to the Indiana Pacers at 120.5 points per 100 possessions. So through 12 games, that's about 1/7 of the schedule. What have you already learned about how good this team is or will be, and what remains to be seen?
I think what we've learned is that a lot of the off-season acquisitions have worked out really well. Obviously, I think we knew what we were getting with Luka Doncic. I think that having a training camp under their belt as Luka and Kyrie have learned to play together, that has been a pleasant surprise. I think that this start of the season has been a pleasant surprise across the board. Prior to the season, I had said that a number of things need to happen in order for the Mavericks to find success. One being Luka Doncic sort of needs to pick up the pace a little bit. And if you watch some of the preseason games, Luka wasn't playing as much. And there were some rumblings in Mavs Twitter world saying that, you know, Kyrie actually looks better with this group than Luka does. And in a large part it was because they were playing so fast, and it's a young group. And Kyrie's obviously a fast player. And so that's been a really pleasant surprise to see Luka really pick up the pace. And I think it's made his acceleration and deceleration even more effective, because he has been pushing the ball himself, kicking the ball out. But when he pushes the ball himself and then he slams on the brakes, It's fun watching the defense try to adapt to that. So the second pleasant surprise, and the second thing I said, was that Derek Lively needs to become the second coming of Tyson Chandler. Again, he's not Tyson Chandler. However, he looks incredible. And he looks so good that you actually see some of the deficiencies of not having more support in the big area, because Maxi Kleber doesn't look necessarily as good. Dwight Powell is Dwight Powell. But when Lively is healthy and when he's in and when he's not in foul trouble, they look pretty awesome. And then the third and sort of final one is some of these role players. They look incredible too. That being Grant Williams has been steady Eddie for us. And he's not only a good vibes guy on the bench, which every team needs, he is amazing at the three-point line. And yeah, he's just a little bit more versatile than role players we've had in the past. And same with Derek Jones Jr. Derek Jones Jr., who is an NBA journeyman, I can't recall him looking this good really ever. His three-point shot is vastly improved, and he can take guys off the dribble. And I think that that has been something that has been lacking for Dallas in the past. You know, the recipe for Dallas has always been Luka, rim runner, shooters. Okay, we've got a rim runner. We've always had shooters, but it's actually, I think that this season has sort of proven a little bit more in that we need shooters who have the ability to take the ball off the dribble. And we have those now. So that's been great. The only disappointing parts have sort of been the play of Josh Green. He's not looked as great. It feels like he's in his own head and there's room to improve there. But yeah, I'm overall just very, very pleased with this team on the offensive side.
Yeah, we'll talk about the defense. That was an excellent overview, and you expertly anticipated my question about pace. I don't know if you've seen the numbers and if the eye test for you is consistent with what the numbers show, but it's really fascinating for me. So as you well know, with Luka Doncic, they're traditionally a really slow playing team near the bottom of the NBA. So in each of the last three seasons, starting with last season and going backwards, they ranked 28th, 30th, and 26th in pace. They're ranking fifth right now in pace at 102.25. I guess what I wanted to ask you was, is that something that was intentional, that was put into place, implemented by the coaching staff and or front office? Or do you think it's just kind of how it's evolved? And what does that specifically open up for the offense?
I think I mean, I can't tell you conclusively if it was intentional, but I bet you it was. You saw the downside of that last year. Now, I still believe that the ability to do both, to play both ways, is going to work in the Mavs' benefit if, fingers crossed, they continue to play well and they make, say, the playoffs. That slowed down half-court offense will benefit Dallas. And the fact is that they know how to play that way. Luka Doncic knows how to slow the game down. And so if they're playing a team, say, the Wolves or something like that, the ability to be able to speed up, but then also grind the game to a halt and make it a half court contest. I think Dallas has the versatility offensively to play both ways. And I think that that has been the thing that excites me the most, because they can clearly play fast. Which has been the question mark. But, you know, I think that being able to play slow also will come in handy come playoff time, because that's when the game really starts to slow down. And, you know, all the scouting and stuff like that, that will make them kind of difficult to scout for.
And more on the Kyrie-Luka pairing, you mentioned that now they have a training camp under their belt. The last time you appeared on the podcast, Kyrie was not on the Mavericks. That was late November 2022. He was acquired in February. So he's only been a part of the franchise for less than 9.5 months now, and he played just 20 games with Luka last season. Sorry, with Dallas last season, 16 with Luka. They went 5-11 together, but the pairing is clearly working a lot better this season. Can you just delve a little bit into some of the details or intricacies that you've noticed with them playing together this season, and how it's a little different than what you saw at the end of last season?
Well, you know, I think that it's hard to talk about this current iteration of the offense without talking about the past a little bit. Obviously fans were, you know, not necessarily thrilled that Jalen Brunson didn't come back, and in large part because Luka's usage rating was so high. And I think that that is something that just generally needed to be addressed, because Dallas didn't really have a secondary playmaker. I know that Dinwiddie is Dinwiddie, but he's not a reliable secondary playmaker for what it is that Dallas needed. And so this to start this season, Luka's usage is as low as it's ever been. And I think that that's intentional because, you know, it's a lot of miles. 82 games, it's a lot. And I felt like last season what we saw was a worn down team. That's what it felt like. I know injuries played a part, but just generally, I think some of the complaining, I think some of the not getting back on defense was literally because somebody is worn down. I think that Kyrie coming in, even just taking possessions, I mean, when you watch Dallas, it's a relief to watch. Like, this is just from a pure fan perspective. You had your possessions last year in which you'd see Luka kind of at the bottom of the screen, kind of do one of these to Dinwiddie, like take this. And as a fan, you'd be like, oh God, what are we going to get here? And now you sort of get that with Kyrie. And when you see him do that with Kyrie, you're just at a little bit more of an ease because he knows how to run an offense. Players are actually quite comfortable playing with him. And this goes sort of broadly speaking to where I think the NBA is today. And it is that you can't, okay, take it a step back. I was very much on the record not in favor of the Kyrie trade. I felt like it was a reactionary move to make up for the fact that they didn't re-sign or, you know, didn't extend Jalen Brunson. Now, put all that aside, it wouldn't have mattered if Kyrie re-signs, which he wind up doing. So the trade, I think it works out. You know what I mean? That is where my assessment was. If he left, it would have been a disaster. But the fact that he stayed, it means it works out. But I was very much on the record that it wasn't going to solve our problems last season. And the reason being is because I don't think teams can scotch tape their way into success anymore. I think we are past that era of basketball. I think it's done. Mm-hmm. I think there are too many teams that have core continuity, core chemistry, that you can't just bring in Kevin Durant at the trade deadline and be like, and now we can compete against Denver. No, you can't. And so
we're Harden in LA.
Exactly.
If you have no big man,
that's why I don't have any faith in the Clippers this season. So that is, I think, you know, ancillary pieces is a completely different thing. What the Lakers did last year is a completely different thing. But in terms of bringing in these huge stars, I'm sorry, the NBA is too good, and you have to have a training camp and you have to learn how to play together. And that is the positive signs we're seeing from Luka and Kyrie. And why I feel really good about this team, even with the defensive woes, is simply because they look like a team that has an identity, a philosophy, schemes. Mm-hmm. If you're a team with that in place, you have a leg up on a bunch of other teams. Even the Lakers last night, I texted my coworker JJ and I said, I wish I could watch this game with you, because I have no idea what they're running right now. It seems like they're hustling their asses off, and that's it. That's the offense. And I don't really sort of believe in that. So some of these teams, say, you know, Minnesota, Denver, Sacramento, these are teams that have real schemes, real identity. And I consider Dallas in that. And part of their identity is screw defense. We're going all offense. And, you know, it's an identity. I don't know if it's going to work, but yeah.
Yeah. Just a little more on Kyrie. So he was off to a little bit of a slow shooting and scoring start, but he started to hit his stride. He's been battling, though, a left foot sprain, so hopefully that's not too serious and he can come back soon. I did see, though, a friend of the show and former guest, Jovan Buha, said on a podcast, I believe it was Hoops Tonight, that he expects, come trade deadline, the Lakers to reach out to the Mavericks about Kyrie Irving if they're struggling and they want to shake things up. And if the Mavericks aren't where they want to be, then maybe they'll entertain it. Do you have any thoughts on that possibility? I know Kyrie's locked up for next season and then the year after he has a player option.
I mean, I don't know what the Lakers have that would interest Dallas, to be perfectly honest. I think that, as I said, I think the most fascinating part of the game, in my opinion, is team building and chemistry and hierarchy and all of that stuff. And I am just so anti mid-season trades that shake everything up in desperation ways.
I know. It's so hard. You need an adjustment period almost always. It's so rare that you're like a Boston Celtics team that just comes together and wins the championship. And like you said, I don't know if that can happen anymore.
I just generally don't think it can. Jason Kidd got killed last year by Dallas Twitter. And, you know, in hindsight, it probably wasn't that fair, to be honest, because one of the things you get to do as a coach, again, with a training camp, is that you get to set expectations for everybody on the court and roles and who's responsible for what and what needs to happen for this to happen. And when you make an in-season trade to the size of bringing in Kyrie Irving, all of that kind of goes out of the window, and then you're just playing improv. And again, the league's too good to be playing improv. I remember, I won't give any details, but having a conversation with an NBA head coach, and he had talked about the fact that his team had made a significant trade, but he wasn't able to put out the lineups that he thought he would because of the expectations he had set at the beginning of the season, and it would have upset half the locker room if he had done what he wanted to do. Okay, that's exactly what we're talking about with regards to the Dallas Mavericks, is that there's no continuity, there's no expectations, there's nothing. It's all out the window. And so seeing Jason Kidd have some success, it's been nice. He's been doing great. Dallas Twitter killed Jason Kidd for this, okay? He started Derrick Jones Jr. He's been starting Derrick Jones Jr. at the start of the season. At game one against San Antonio, we saw the starting lineup, and Dallas Twitter was like, why the F isn't he starting Josh Green? Everybody was losing it. And 10 games in, everybody is quiet because that was 100% the right move. So,
yeah. Just to add a little color on what I said, the trade that Jovan thought it could look like possibly would be something like D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, and a pick for Kyrie. So
that's okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you don't have to react. Yeah, well, you already did. No thanks. We'll pass. So you were saying Luka has the lowest usage rate in quite some time. It may even be the lowest of his career, or maybe outside of his rookie season. I'm not sure, but his free throw attempts are also noticeably down, which is good and bad. It's less of a toll on him. He's down from 10.5 attempts per game to 7.7. It's also a small sample size, I guess. But do you see that more as a positive than anything? I mean, his shooting is up. He's hitting so many threes. He's scoring as much as he needs to. He's just taking less abuse, I think, in the paint.
Yeah, no, I view that as a huge positive. Again, it's like, I just think that the wear and tear, I mean, that was something that when you watched him last season, you literally had the thought, this is not sustainable. As great as he is, it is not sustainable to watch this guy control the entirety of every single possession. And it played out exactly what we thought. I think having a weapon, if you look at your arsenal and you have a Luka Doncic as your weapon, defenses are too smart. And you can't stop Luka, but you can stop the Mavericks if that's your only weapon. And the fact is that we get to share the wealth. They played the Pelicans twice, and in the first game, it was so clear that the philosophy of that game was let Kyrie cook. And they did that. And in the first quarter, Luka was barely involved. It was kind of wild. And the only time he was involved was when they kick it out to him, and he still had like 11 points or something in the first quarter, and it was because he was just picking his spots, and I think that that's the best version of Luka. And again, we know what he's capable of, and I think that that is what makes this whole thing a little exciting if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan, is because I don't feel like we've even seen him go full Luka. Like, we really haven't. I mean, he's sort of been playing this sort of, he's playing the right kind of basketball, and he has the ability to do so. And a lot of people that were complaining about Luka in prior years, a lot of that had to do with the fact that he didn't have the weapons in his arsenal to be playing the right kind of offense.
He's 24, which is hard to believe, turning 25 February 28th. A legitimate chance at an MVP, his first MVP this season, you think?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I was having this discussion over the last couple of days. I think that the guard play in the NBA is at an all-time high. Not an all-time high. It's very good. I'll just say that. Just not to not be so reactionary. But I do think it's very, very good. And I think that a lot of people are going to sort of suffer from Luka fatigue. Maybe I could see that. I'll put an example. I know that you're a stats guy and not like a overly discourse kind of person, but a couple nights ago I saw a tweet that was like, when are we going to start talking about Anthony Edwards for MVP? And my response in my head was probably never, because there's a lot better players than Anthony Edwards on a basketball court.
And that shouldn't be top five in MVP voting. I don't think even close right now. Right now,
he might be close, but I don't think he's
okay. But not.
But he's not exactly. And so,
Embiid, Giannis.
You're seeing that.
Jokic,
and I think that you're.
Tatum,
I think that you're going to see that on the morning. You know, the ESPN takey shows and stuff like that. Not just Anthony Edwards, but and then somebody texted me the next morning. Halliburton's going to be first team All NBA. And again, it's sort of like these guys are amazing. And Anthony Edwards, I believe, will be a top five player before it's all said and done. I think Halliburton has the chance to be an All NBA guard eventually. But Stephen Curry still exists and Luka Doncic still exists.
And SGA also deserves some respect.
SGA he's way is, up there. Yeah, is another name that people have texted me and say he's in the NBA. MVP discussion. First off, I mean, Luka, I don't even, he might not even be top three. I don't even know. You know, he might be third.
It's tough.
But I am a huge.
A lot of stars out here doing a lot for their team.
Yeah. So it's unequivocally Jokic's best player in basketball.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid looks incredible. Tyrese Maxey looks incredible. Like all just.
And that hurts Embiid because of Maxey's.
Jason Tatum
success.
Looks incredible. So you have so many stars in this game. And for Luka, I think if God willing, he can continue this pace, he is in that top three discussion. And I don't think there's any doubt about it. The way he's playing so far, even his bad games, the other night he scored 24 and people were like, crappy Luka game. And I'm like, 24, 8, and 9, like that's not a bad game by any means. And I think he's on that level. This is all discourse. This is all dumb. Whatever, but it's like Luka missed one playoff last year. It was the first playoffs he's ever missed, and he got killed. People were like, this guy sucks, maybe. And the other players we're comparing him to have literally not made the playoffs in like 3 years. So that's the kind of thing where it's like Jason Tatum came on our podcast last year, and he had like a really eloquent way of sort of talking about the fact that this sort of narrative and fatigue on a player can really negatively impact your ability to win certain awards. And for Jason Tatum, he made great points, which was, I've been good for a long time, to the point that I think people are just tired of me being good. And I think that Luka might, that would be his downside. I mean, obviously Jokic is a lot better, but all that to say, I think Luka right now is a top three MVP candidate. And when you're top three in, you know, late November, then yeah, you have a shot.
Yeah, not a bad place to be. And also just storyline is so important. So like you said, that could work against Luka, but also Embiid, Giannis, and Jokic all have an MVP or more. So that could also work in Luka's favor.
I think
he's the new guy going for it.
I think Jokic is in such a
rare air.
And again, I keep bringing this sort of up, and as much as the stats and the all of that matters, the discourse does matter because Jokic is not. I was talking with JJ about this. Jokic is not playing so much better than he did last year or even the year prior. The difference is he has a ring, which is silly, but he's always been this dominant. He's always been this dominant, and now he has healthy teammates. You know, obviously Jamal Murray's going through something right now, but he has healthy teammates. And now in my head, Luka has to show that he is clearly better than Jokic to win the MVP. And I don't know if he'll do that, but it's funny that our brains do that all because Jokic has a ring. You know what I mean?
It's funny though. I kind of see it as a little bit of not the opposite, but that because Jokic has won multiple MVPs, that it may be harder for voters to get to giving it to him again, even if he has the same or comparable stats as he's been. But I don't know. We'll see.
I'll just counter that and say that there's a lot of voters that think, are we really going to snub him 2 years in a row? Because he didn't win.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. That's a long time without the best player in the league not winning it.
So, exactly.
Anyway.
And so all that to say is that I think Luka has to show that he is, I think he's got to have the Mavericks on par with the Nuggets or better.
Yeah. Well, look at that. I guess I am a discourse guy. We just spent like 5 or 6 minutes on that. I've been converted. We have to talk about Derek Lively the second, though. I absolutely love when young players, rookies, and especially guys that are 19 years old are just in the starting lineup right away.
Yeah.
So technically he was off the bench the opener, 31 minutes, but injected into the starting lineup right after that, has started ever since. You said he's not quite Tyson Chandler yet, but there's a lot to really like with the rim protection, the rim running. Just take a second to rave about this guy. And we saw what happened the game that he was out. 72 points in the paint against the Raptors. They got out-rebounded miserably. So that just goes to show how integral he is to this roster.
Yeah, it's been a pleasant surprise with, you know, his just general energy, positivity, effort, all of that stuff is through the roof. And maturity, to be honest. Being a big next to Luka, you just have a very specific job. And that's what's funny is that there's been some Duke fans that I know, and they're just like, where was this guy? And it's like, well, you probably needed a lot more out of him at Duke. And what you need on the Mavericks is very, very specific. And he's playing with possibly, you know, a top 2-3 distributor in the league. I think his job actually is just very concise, very specific, and he's excelling like crazy at that. Every great thing has its negative component, and all it's exposed is the fact that when he's not in, then it's rough. And that I think that the Mavericks have moves to make to support that a little bit, because Maxi Kleber has been an amazing Maverick, but it feels like the injuries, the age is wearing on him a bit, and he doesn't look like the same player. He just doesn't. Dwight Powell is, I jokingly said, Dwight Powell would have made an amazing Brian Cardinal. I love his energy, love his enthusiasm. I think he could be actually a pretty effective like spark off the bench when things are looking, you need to muck it up, throw him in. I'm in on that. But reliable center in the rotation, I don't know about that. And so I think that if I am, say, playing the Mavericks in the playoffs and I'm scouting, the very first thing, the literal number one agenda item is get Derek Lively in foul trouble. And he's young. And it'll probably be pretty easy to do, to be honest. And then that will put the Mavericks at quite the disadvantage. So my hope is that they get a serviceable backup for him.
They really need one. Yeah. Just like the Clippers, and Daniel Tice isn't going to cut it. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll I love Lively. All that to say is that how awesome is it that, you know, less than 15 games into his NBA career, the fans of his team are literally like, we need to do more to make sure Lively can stay on the court. And if he's off the court, we need somebody who can replicate Lively. I mean, what more can you say? The kid is like, he is just an effective rookie in a class full of amazing rookies.
Quick follow-up, was one of those Duke fans that you referenced possibly a colleague of yours?
No. Weirdly, no.
No. I mean, it would be weird to call him a Duke fan, but I mean, kind of is.
He definitely is, but he's not the person I was referencing. It's literally the Duke Twitter people that are like, where was this? Jake is a little smart to be asking that question.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more show.
I'm Alex Kennedy of basketballnews.com and Running Up the Score, and you're listening to On the NBA Beat.
I guess we didn't really spend much time on THJ, so Tim Hardaway Jr., sixth man extraordinaire this year. Now he's up to 18.7 points per game because he just went off Wednesday night, 31 points, hit seven threes. He's even drawing a lot of charges, too, on the defensive end. Just from a realistic or maybe negative standpoint, how sustainable is it that Tim Hardaway Jr. is attempting 9.3 three-pointers per game? Because it's not just when Kyrie is out. It's also when he's in. I mean, he's hitting them at a really good clip now, but do you think that's workable for the duration of the season at that rate?
Maybe not quite at that rate, but I think close. Yeah.
But you like his role? You like him in the sixth man role? What he's doing?
I do. I believe that success on an NBA roster is starring in your role. And I think that THJ has always had an outsized role. Like, I always think that he's needed to fill some shoes that were probably not, this sounds like an insult, and I don't mean it to be, but maybe too big. He always really striked me, to keep it in Mavs world, he did always strike me as like a Jason Terry type. Extremely irrational confidence. The ultimate no, yes kind of player when they shoot the ball. The shots he takes sometimes, I'm like, what are, it's like, 21 seconds on the shot clock and he jacks a three. And in your head, you're like, no. And then it goes in, you're like, okay. Jason Terry used to make us feel like that all the time.
Kind of like Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford, exactly. From a Clippers perspective, a little bit.
Exactly. And so I've always been a very big fan because I like just an assertive, decisive player. It comes with its frustrating moments for sure. But generally, I think a player like that on a roster like this is super necessary, like super, super necessary, especially on offense, with the fact that you have an offense running through Luka, Kyrie is your secondary option, and then you have the shooting that has been quite great from some of our role players. I love it. I friggin' love it. It is the ultimate. I've always said that he can be the ultimate X factor. You do not want your team to rely on an X factor, though. And he can really turn the tide. When you look at 82 games, I could totally see a world in which he affects, like he single-handedly wins us like 8 games, which is like massive, you know? And in a playoff, totally, that's even bigger. So I've always been a fan of his. I think he's got a really great, you know, he's been playing with Luka for a long time. Clearly Luka likes it, you know? So I'm into it. I think,
yeah,
I
think if he's
maintainable, yeah.
Yeah, if he's shooting like 44-45% from the field, that's great. If he's shooting like 35%, but that was like just a really rough stretch last season, and we know he's better than that.
Well,
but,
yeah, and he was coming off of an injury.
Yeah, that wasn't fair. That's not fair.
But, I feel as though he's looking a little bit more like the most mature, the most sort of like... Yeah. A holistic version of who he is. And I feel like the roster around him is great. And the most exciting thing for me is that I think about, outside of Derek Lively, if a player is like significantly injured, I think the Mavs stay competitive, you know, like if Kyrie, you know, didn't play last night and THJ was the high scorer of the game. And like, that's kind of what I'm talking about, is that I think mm-hmm. that not much has to change. They can still stay competitive. They're not going to win every game. They're going to play Washington every game. But I think that they stay competitive, which is a good sign.
Yeah. You mentioned Josh Green's off to a kind of disappointing start. He was signed to a 3-year, $41 million extension just before the regular season began. He disappears for long stretches. Sometimes in 37 minutes, he went scoreless in the win over the Wizards. Where do you see his progression? Are you that concerned or not really at this point early in the season?
I'm not concerned. I have a Duke colleague of mine always says that he doesn't like to react to things unless he will come to conclusions on something after 20 to 25 games. He always says, give it 20 to 25 games. That's kind of where I'm at with Josh Green. Look, a lot of expectations coming into the season. The first time I feel like there was a significant amount of expectations. I think that the roster construction around Dallas allows him to work through it and the team to not suffer too terribly much, because the team is succeeding while he struggles. And so if he figures it out, it's only better for the team in terms of his personal ability to excel. Honestly, I would love for him to become the primary physical, awesome defender. I think that in a team that is really lacking on defense, you know, he has that ability to take on a little bit of what Dorian Finney-Smith used to take on. He's not a long wing, but he's an energetic wing, and I think he can be quite annoying. So I'd love for him to really say, okay, while I'm struggling, this is what I'm going to figure out. I'm going to define my role as a stopper.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he is one of those players that likes to play with a lot of energy. And you ever watch those players that as soon as they get the ball and they start dribbling, it's almost like they're moving faster than the ball. That's what it feels like watching him sometimes. And so I would love to see his spot up numbers just improve, because he's got a jump shot, and he showed that in flashes last year where he would, he had like a pretty solid, I don't know the exact numbers, but from the corner three, he was really solid. I would love to see that improved a bit, but yeah, I'm not terribly concerned though. And he actually weirdly, not identically, but like he does sort of remind me of Jaden Hardy a little bit, in that the energy is so through the roof that sometimes they move faster than they need to. And I think that they both kind of like, it's kind of nice to have both of them and be like, all right, which one's having the better game? Again, I just really love this roster and the ability to plug and play where it makes sense. I mean, Dante Exum at times looks incredible. There's one lineup and it's Luka, Kyrie, Lively, Grant Williams, and Dante Exum. And that might be my favorite lineup we have. It's just a solid group. And not like Exum's going to be this offensive force, but he's a good defender. And so that sort of optionality in the Jaden Hardy, Josh Green, Dante Exum range is nice. But I believe in Josh Green. That, to answer your question, I believe in him, and I believe that the roster is capable enough to support his struggles and see them sort of like, you know, come out for the better.
Noted. And not to throw cold water on the Mavericks' hot start as we wind down, but if we look at their opponents, they've played a lot of subpar teams, just being honest. Not the best strength of schedule thus far. It's going to get a lot tougher soon. They have a back-to-back night, Saturday and Sunday, at Milwaukee. Then they host Sacramento. Then they visit LA and play the Lakers. And maybe the Clippers will be a little bit more adjusted by then. We'll see. But so the schedule will get a little bit tougher. I'm curious, what are you looking at in those games? Is it more on the defensive end that you want to see them prove something, or what will you be monitoring?
Well, first off, with strength of schedule, I completely agree. And I think that is a really valid piece of commentary. What I would say, though, is last year they weren't winning those games. And honestly, the last couple years, they were not winning those games. That was a frustration from Mavs world, was that they weren't taking care of the teams they needed to take care of. And funnily enough, Luka's such a big game guy, you know, that he gets up for. When we had him on the podcast a year and a half ago, he used to say that that's what he would target the team's best players, because he lives for moments like that. So he would get the switch on Giannis, so Giannis is defending him, or he'd get the switch on LeBron. So, and he loves that kind of thing. He's a little bit Michael Jordan like brain in that way. And so it was never the big games that would necessarily concern the Mavericks fan. It was like the Houston Rockets, because they had a tendency to play down to their opponent. And so in terms of growth from year over year, it's been nice seeing them just handle these bad opponents, because I can tell you, they did not do that in the past. And they are beating a lot of these teams pretty handedly. It's not been nerve-wracking necessarily. So that's been nice. All that to say, in terms of the more competitive teams coming up, a big point of emphasis I would like to see is the defense get better. Specifically, the offensive rebounding has been frustrating to watch. JJ has said this on a podcast. I'm comfortable saying this, but he, you know, when he goes and calls games and he gets a little time with the head coaches, and he was talking to Jason Kidd, and Jason Kidd, he had brought up the defense problem. And Jason Kidd said, we are very, very comfortable playing in the 120s and the 130s. And so to me, that's a sign of saying like, look, we're not the best defense in the world, but we believe that you have to be on your best offensive behavior to beat us because we are going to score. And so for me, I anticipate those games to be very, very close because Dallas is not a good defensive team. And I would love to see how that philosophy plays out. Kyrie and Luka last year, they really, really struggled in close games and closing out these close games in the final 2 minutes. I believe that some of these games are going to come down to that. And I would like to see some offensive execution in the final 2 minutes that doesn't involve a Luka step back. That we watched a lot of those last season. So I believe that with these better teams, they're going to be just much closer games. I'm looking to see how Dallas proves that sort of like, we're comfortable beating you in the 120s and 130s. I'm not looking to see if they're that much better on defense. I would love it, but my hunch is that they want the score to be up and they want to outbeat you in the last 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And Dallas fans may be catching the title bug. We saw a few weeks ago the Rangers captured their first championship in franchise history. Luka attended an ALCS game with Dirk and a World Series game. I mean, I think it's always ridiculous when it's title or bust, especially in this situation with the Mavericks in their trajectory and just some of the really good elite teams in the league. But I'm curious how you see expectations for this season. What kind of pressure is on the Mavericks to succeed with this version of the team that's around Luka?
Unfortunately, I don't think that the team is a title or bust kind of team because of the step back they took last year with the loss of Jalen Brunson. I mean, and that's probably the most frustrating thing as a fan is that it felt like we took several steps back from that Western Conference final year. That said, I do believe that when you survey the landscape of the Western Conference, a deep playoff run is what I consider to be a successful season. And I would be disappointed if they were a play-in or even a first-round exit. I think that most fans would be disappointed in that just simply because, again, when you survey the landscape of the league – in the West, you know, there are certain teams that like, I expect us to be competitive about with just about anyone except for Denver. Denver, I've talked to other Western Conference fans. Denver feels inevitable. They feel really, really, really freaking good and hard to stop. Outside of that, Phoenix, Minnesota, I'll even throw the Lakers just for fun, the Thunder. I think Dallas should be competitive against any of them, and Luka being 24, which is a really weird thing to say for a 24-year-old. He is a playoff vet, and he knows what it's like to be there, and I like that he's on our side.
Yeah. Thanks so much for doing this. We covered a lot of ground. It's always a lot of fun talking with you, and you bring the knowledge as well.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.